the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's Lifetime Income. Chris, before we begin today's show, I want to sort of alert our listeners to some changes that we're making to Lifetime Income. We've done a recent survey, and we've gotten a lot of emails from listeners. Hey, can you cover some topics? For example, we got an email, what do I do as a millennial? And then we've gotten several from women that listen to the program saying, you know, can you cover issues that particularly concern me? And so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to cover issues that are particular to a woman. Now, I want to begin by saying we're not going to cover everything in just one program. We're going to begin a series, as we have done, covering millennial issues, and we're also going to be covering issues that relate to you as a woman, whether you're married, whether you're single, single parent, or maybe you just recently gone through a divorce. But we want to make sure that we're covering some topics that are specific to your particular needs. In fact, if you would like us to cover a topic on the program that you would like covered, you know, maybe you're going through a divorce, maybe you're recently widowed, maybe you're just a single woman starting out in life with a job, and you would like those issues covered on the program, the easiest thing to do is just simply write to us at the show, and we'll talk about that at the end, and we'll try to get to those issues. But let's talk about today's program, because we're going to cover a lot of ground. Now, I want to point out, a lot of this is going to be covered from just a general sense, but we want to get the information out to you. We're going to cover taxes, because if you're a single woman or head of household, you're going to be impacted by taxes much differently than if, let's say, you're married. We're going to talk about some estate planning issues. And also, if you're going through, just so happen to be going through a divorce right now, the new tax law does have an impact on divorces, and we're going to cover that issue. And then also Social Security, and there's a reason I want to cover that. According to the Department of Social Security, 85% of the survivors of Social Security are women. Ladies, you just simply live longer than men. So in the weeks ahead, we're going to be doing additional shows that will be more targeted to specific issues that impact you as a woman, whether you're married, divorced, single parent, or just single. And of course, we want to hear from you, whatever you want covered, whether it's estate planning issues, income, handling child's education, income taxes, investments, and we'll get more specific, but we're going to cover those in a round table. We have two women on staff who are certified financial planners, so I should take that back. One will be shortly. We're going to have them on the program, and they're going to try to answer questions from their perspective as a woman. So if there is something specific you would like covered, please write to us on the program, and we'll try to get that, because we do want to cover issues regarding women and millennials. But first, let's get into the weeds, and we're going to start out with taxes. Being single places you in a higher tax bracket at a lower level of income than if you were married. Now, there are several key levels you need to be made aware of that could place you in a higher tax bracket. So let's begin. First of all, if you are single or head of a household, you can make up to $9,700 in $13,350, and you pay zero in income taxes. Once you rise above that, you start the 12% bracket at $9,700, the 22% tax bracket at $39,475, and the 24% bracket at $84,200. Now, the 12 and the 22% brackets are a little bit different if you are head of household, main breadwinner with children. The figure at 12% is $13,350, and it's roughly about $53,000 at the 22% bracket. But after the 24% bracket, it's the same whether you're single or you are head of household. Now, why this is important, because after you make from $84,000 to roughly $160,000, you are in a 24% tax bracket. But once you exceed that limit, your income jumps up to a higher bracket. You jump from 24 to 32%. Now, against these brackets, you have a standard deduction of $12,200 if you are single, or $18,350 if you're head of household. Now, the key, if you are a single woman, whether you're a widow, divorcee, single parent, whatever the case may be, the key is keeping your income underneath that $160,725 threshold, because once you jump to that level, then you start going up to the 32, the 35% bracket. And I mean, you think about it. Let's say you live in my own state of California. If you make $160,725, that places you in a 32% federal tax bracket. And in the state of California, it would place you in a 9.3% bracket. So the government would essentially be taking 40% of what you make. So it's really important to look at tax planning from this perspective. Now, if you are a widow, you could find yourself experiencing what we call the widow's penalty. And the way this happens is you lose your Social Security, because in most cases, you will usually take your husband's Social Security, which is larger than yours. But you still experience the loss of income, because if you take your husband's, you are now forgoing your own. You don't get both. And then you're also, your Social Security benefits could be subject to taxation. 50% of it could be subject to tax, or 85%, depending on your bracket, and it happens at a lower level. If you're single, they start taxing it if your income is between $25,000 and $34,000. If you're married, it starts being taxed if your income is $32,000 to $44,000. So you can just see a couple of things that happen there. Number one, you can jump into a higher tax bracket at a lower level of income. If you are on Social Security, you could have your Social Security subject to either up to 50% of it included as taxable income, or 85, depending on your level of income. So, Chris, one of the first important things to do if you are a single woman, widow, divorcee, whatever the case may be, is to really understand what your income is and what tax bracket you're placed in. Because believe me, they can take a lot of your income, both at the federal level and at the state level.
So what do they do to minimize taxes, or at least keep themselves in a lower tax bracket?
Just simply stop reporting it.
Okay, so instructions on how to go to jail.
Okay, to follow. No, I mean the same kind of things that we would do for a married couple. If you're single, obviously contributions to a pension plan, like a 401k plan, you can put away $19,000 a year, $25,000 if you're over age 50, Roth conversions, especially if you're retired, tax-free bonds, dividend stocks can also help to keep you in a lower bracket while minimizing your taxes. I mean, basically, the first $40,000 of dividends, if you're single, is taxed at 0%. And anything over that on the next 400 is taxed at 15%. So a lot of the good things that we can do tax planning wise for married couples work equally effective if you are single. Now, there is one good, I guess I don't know if we want to call it good news or bad news. The one piece of good news, if you are divorced and that divorce takes place after 2018, this year, the alimony payments you receive are tax-free. Now, your ex-husband pays the taxes on the amounts you receive, but word of advice to husbands, by the way, you may want to see a marriage counselor and work things out, as divorce from a man or a husband's point of view is very expensive under this new tax law. And because of this tax quirk, what you'll see happen, Chris, now, and I've heard it, I've talked to a divorce attorneys, because I have a client right now that is going through a divorce, is the attorneys work something out on the settlement. In the case of a particular client, his income is about $300,000 a year, a little over, and the alimony payments would be close to $150,000. Well, because he's going to have to pay the tax on that, obviously there's going to have to be some kind of adjustment made on either a lower alimony level to reflect the taxes, because it wouldn't be fair if the husband makes, let's say, $300,000, he's paying the entire tax on all $300,000, even though he's only receiving half of it for himself and the other going. Now, many of the tax planning tools used to lower taxes, such as contributions to a pension plan Roth IRAs, Roth conversions, dividend-paying stocks, things like tax-free bonds, apply just as much to a single woman as they do to a married couple, if not more so, because taxes are at a lower level of income. In other words, you reach those higher brackets at lower income. I had a client who lost her husband early this year. She's going to be taking her husband's Social Security, which was larger than her own, but we're also going to be doing and finishing a Roth conversion, which we started around 5 years ago, so that her husband's IRA will become hers because she's going to inherit it, but it's also going to be tax-free. So we're also using dividend stocks on roughly the first $39,000 of income are taxed at zero. So a Roth IRA and dividends, we're going to keep her in a lower tax bracket. The dividend stocks also pay a higher level of income. You know, the kind of dividends you would get from utilities, things like consumer staples, REITs, and energy, where the dividend yields are 4 to 6%. Because remember, out of all of this, even though she's taking her husband's Social Security, she's also going to have to forfeit her own. In this case, her husband's Social Security was $28,000. She got half of that, or $14,000. So she's going to get her husband's Social Security of $28,000, but she will lose her $14,000. So getting dividend yields of 4 to 6% versus, let's say, taxable treasuries at 2% is going to provide her with extra income. And then using the tax-free bonds as well as Roth IRAs and the dividends is going to keep her in a low tax bracket, which will make up the difference for the loss of income.
Now, what about estate planning for single individuals? And I guess what I'm asking, Jim, if someone's a single parent, if they're divorced, a widow, what would be your advice as it relates to estate planning for these folks?
You know, hopefully, Chris, if you're married and your husband passed away, you had an estate plan such as a living trust, you had durable medical powers, durable powers of attorney, so you're going to avoid the issues of probate and estate taxes because they're not an issue on the death of the first spouse, but may become an issue in the future if they lower the estate tax brackets. You carry on if you are a successor trustee, just as if your husband was living. Now, a couple of things you're going to want to do. You're going to want to update your durable powers of attorney and your medical powers so you know who you want to make the medical decisions should, for example, you become incapacitated. You have a stroke, you develop Alzheimer's or dementia. You know, typically, if you were married, your husband would make those decisions and would be on your durable medical powers. Well, now you're single and you're a widow. You need to change that. Who do you want to make those decisions on your behalf? And this is really important if you're a parent with, let's say, underage children, you have significant assets such as a home or maybe a life insurance policy. You should have a trust that protects your kids and sees that whatever assets you have, whether it's a home, your 401k plan, college funds, life insurance, or investments, are held in trust for the benefit of your children, especially if they're underage. You want to have also, I would recommend very strongly, a corporate trustee that can handle these issues. A lot of times you'll see somebody, you know, they lose a spouse and they'll say, oh, I'm going to make Sally my best friend, my successor trustee, or make those decisions. They may not be qualified. So you always want them held in a living trust. Keep them separate just in case, for example, you remarry, especially, for example, in a divorce settlement where the settlement involved is substantial or significant assets are given. I'm working on a case right now where we help the client and the attorney negotiate the divorce settlement. And since the kids were still underage, we set up a separate trust to protect the assets, not only for her children, but to keep them separate should she decide to remarry again. It's also important to update your medical powers, your durable powers of attorney with a professional rather than close friends, which, you know, I see over and over again. It can get quite complex depending on what your circumstances are, the size of the estate, the assets. And in this case, my client had who got the divorce, there are large 529 plans that have been set up to pay for college expenses when their children graduate from high school and enter into college.
Jim, we started off the program talking about financial matters relating directly to women. I'm curious, based on the number of years that you've been in the industry, Jim, have you found that the situation is different for women, whether it's a 401k or personal investments?
You know, there is a difference. I can't say I can make a generic statement, but, you know, women tend to be busy, whether they're a single parent between working, being a mother. I mean, they don't have too much free time. They tend to be, I have found at least over the years, more conservative, but I can't say that is a stereotype that fits all women. If you are single and working, you're probably better off in a diversified portfolio made up of index funds rather than, let's say, trying to time the market or get into various sectors in the market. So, you know, if you're contributing to a 401k plan at work, you might want to have some index funds that are balanced out, some stock funds, blue chip funds, some bond funds, cash, because simply you probably don't have the time to manage your investments. If you're retired, I recommend individual dividend paying stocks for the reasons we mentioned, because you want to take advantage of that zero tax bracket and because of low taxes and the increasing income stream. One of the issues, Chris, that is different for a lot of women who retire is they simply live longer than men. So those assets and pensions, whether it's a company pension or Social Security, need to take care of you over a longer period of time. So it's probably more important they have assets that increase their income over a period of time. Nothing works better for tax planning purposes and income planning than my favorite is blue chip dividend paying stocks, such as many of the companies that are included, for example, in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. I also like annuities and individual bonds that can produce a predictable source of income you know you can count on. A lot of women did not get involved in, let's say, the financial decisions. They weren't managing the portfolio. Maybe it was the husband working with the advisor. That is why making the right choices, for example, on Social Security, can be so important to a single woman, a single parent, a divorcee, or Chris, even a widow.
Let's actually get into that, Jim. Social Security, which, by the way, for many retirees, it does remain the most valuable and predictable source of income. So let's go ahead and dig into that too.
Okay. Well, let's look at a couple that is married. Chances are the husband was the main breadwinner. So in most cases, with women making up 85% of survivors receiving Social Security, it is really important when planning as a couple to maximize those benefits. I'm a real big proponent of postponing Social Security to age 70, where the benefits are going to be 32% larger than where, let's say, where they would be at full retirement age at age 66 or age 67. And the reason is this leaves the surviving wife with a larger benefit, as she would forfeit her own benefit and then take her husband's Social Security. So I also believe in maintaining, for example, insurance policy or keeping existing ones in place. So if the husband passes away first, those insurance proceeds can become, number one, they're tax-free, and they can provide an additional source of income to make up for lost Social Security benefits at the death of the first spouse, usually the husband. The reason I say that, there's a lot of ads on TV, and it shows this retired couple, and it says, gosh, we learned that our insurance policy has benefits, and they're talking you into selling the proceeds. What they're not telling you is between a husband and wife, one of you passes away, you're going to lose one Social Security check. So I'm not a big believer, Chris, in canceling insurance policies. Let's say you have a whole life policy, something you took out to take care of the wife or maybe the children when you're working, and it's either paid up or you're still making payments. I'm not a proponent, if you can afford it, in getting rid of that policy, because you are going to lose, in most cases, 50% of your Social Security benefit when one spouse passes away. This is a big mistake I see happen all too often with individuals that have life insurance policies. They cash them in for the cash value, or they think they're no longer necessary. Now, if you're single or haven't been married long enough to qualify for your ex's Social Security benefits, here are some important dates I want to tell you about. If you were born between 1943 in 1954, full Social Security benefits, that means they don't reduce them, is age 66. If you were born, let's say, in 1955, you have to wait till you're age 66 and 2 months. Age 56, it's 66 and 4 months. Age 57, it's age 66 and 6 months. And then if you were born after 1960 or later, it's age 67. And full retirement benefits means you don't get any reduction in your Social Security benefits. Remember, if you take it at age 62, you're only going to get about 75%. So here's a couple other things you need to know if you're a woman and you're single. You have to have been paid 40 quarters, or essentially 10 years, into Social Security to qualify for your own benefits. Now, here's another factor. If you intend to work in your 60s, or you need to work, it's best to postpone benefits, as you could forfeit benefits. You will lose $1 of benefit for every $2 over the annual limit prior to, let's say, full retirement age at age 66 and age 67. It's somewhere around a little over $10,000. Now, if you are eligible and apply for benefits on more than, let's say, one work record, you generally receive, and here's the good news, you generally receive the higher benefit. Let's say, for example, you worked, you paid into Social Security your 40 quarters, but let's say you're divorced, or let's say your husband passed away, and now you can qualify for not only your own retirement, but that of your spouse's, or here's the other one that many women are not aware of, your divorced spouse's benefits. Now, here's the thing. You may be required to apply for both benefits. It's called deemed filing, because you apply for one benefit, you are required or deemed to file for another. Now, here's another issue. If your spouse dies, you can get a widow's benefit if you're age 60 or older, but you're going to get less income. If you are disabled and you become a widow, you can get those benefits as early as age 50. Now, your benefit will depend, obviously, on your age and the amount your deceased spouse was entitled to at the time of his death. One more area I should cover is if you're divorced. And today, the statistics say 50% or more of marriages end up in divorces, so this is important. You should inquire what the benefits would be based on your ex-spouse's work. Many women may find they can get a higher benefit based on their ex, especially if that ex is deceased. If you don't know, for example, your ex's Social Security number, what you need to do is provide your spouse's date and place of birth and the names of your spouse's parents. Now, here are a couple other things, and I'm going to go through these slowly because I want you to write them down if you are divorced. If your ex-spouse is living, you can receive benefits based on ex-spouse's work if, one, your marriage lasted 10 years or longer. Two, you were unmarried. Three, you're age 62 or older. Four, the benefit you're entitled to receive is based on your own work is less than the benefits you would have received on your ex's work. In other words, let's say you got divorced, you were married for 10 years, but you've been on your own for 10 years, you've paid into the system, now you're approaching full retirement age, and you go to apply and you find your own Social Security benefits are X amount of dollars, but what about your ex-spouse? If your spouse's, let me give you an example. Let's just make this simple. Let's say your ex-spouse's Social Security benefit is $30,000. Your own Social Security benefit is like $10,000 or $11,000. Well, half of your ex-spouse's Social Security benefit is $15,000, which is larger than your own, even though you've paid into the system. You are eligible for half of your ex-spouse's Social Security if you were married for 10 years. So, Chris, this is really something important that is often overlooked, and a lot of times people just don't take advantage of it to their own detriment.
Well, Jim, on our recent survey, we got feedback from a listener who said that she really enjoyed when you did a case study. So let's go ahead and do a case study that illustrates the points that you're making on this program.
And we'll just call this the case of Laura. Laura was a paralegal before she got married. She has two children. Her husband was a senior executive, the president of a subsidiary of a defense contractor. And basically, the majority of their wealth was mainly consisted of a custom home, which was very nice, and then also stock options of her husband that were worth a considerable amount of money. In fact, well over $10 million. And so she had listened to a program that we had done on divorces. And so she contacted us, and then we began to work with her and her divorce attorney. And it was interesting because through the process of discovery, we found out, for example, there was real estate in Florida with both their names, both her and her husband, that she was made unaware of, and also a overfunded college fund. Literally, almost $900,000 had been salted away in a college fund. And as I told Laura, I said, that's enough to send your two kids to Harvard, both undergrad and medical school. So the main asset, as we pointed out, was the husband's stock options. And basically, in the divorce settlement, she got a lump sum payment rather than alimony payments. She chose to get a lump sum payment. And then the second thing, she got half of her husband's stock options. Now, one of the problems with that is she wanted to sell the stock options because the company paid no dividends. And based on a paralegal's salary, she would not be able to live on her salary and the lifestyle that she'd been accustomed to over the last 25 years. So we sold the stock options. And here was the issue. The one thing that came out very clear is I pointed out, I said, look, Laura, you're in your early 50s. Statistically, your mom and dad, your mom is in her 90s. Her dad died at close to 90. And I said, your mom is in the 90s. Chances are you could live well into your 90s, which could be another 40 years. And one issue you're going to be facing is inflation and also rising medical costs. So you have to have something in your portfolio that's going to handle those future inflationary costs. But she wanted something that was predictable. In other words, a level of income she could count on coming in every single month that she could use to supplement what she earned going back being a paralegal again. So we did a number of things. We negotiated a settlement for the kids for college. Basically, the college fund was overfunded, so there would be enough to pay for college, and that was segregated in a separate account that would go to pay for college. And so there was less of a worry as a parent. They shared custody of both the children of covering those college costs. And then when it came to investments, I told her, I said, look, with President Trump winning the election, chances are they were going to beef up defense and defense stocks would continue to do well. And, you know, if you hold this stock, it won't produce any income, but the stock could go up significantly because the president has vowed to increase defense spending, which is what actually happened. But what we did is we reached a compromise on the portfolio. 65% of the assets were put in a laddered bond portfolio, mainly municipal bonds, to keep her in a low tax bracket now that she would be single. And then 35% would be in dividend-paying stocks because, once again, her need was for income. So the bonds produced tax-free income, and the dividend-paying stocks would produce income that would rise over time. Now, based on the rise in the stock market over the last couple of years, that portfolio is probably 55% bonds and 45% thanks to the rise in the stock market. But you know what? The most important thing is she sleeps at night, she's comfortable, and she has income that can supplement what she earns from work to supplement her job. And the dividends are taxed at a lower bracket, as we have pointed out in the program. Basically, if you're single, the first $40,000 of dividends are taxed at zero. Anything over that is 15%. So the dividends were taxed at a lower bracket, and then the tax-free bonds kept her in a lower bracket. So this is just one particular case, and we'll be talking about others that relate to you if you're a woman listening to this program. And speaking of that, we would like to hear from you. And Chris is going to tell you how to contact us if there's an area of concern. Whether you're a single parent, you just recently lost your husband, you and your husband are getting close to retirement, or you're a single parent or a single woman getting close to retirement, or put it in another way, we're working on a case right now where the woman is actually the main breadwinner of the family. So we want to hear from you and what you have to say and what you would like covered. This is very much your program as it is ours.
we really do appreciate your input. We always try to accommodate your requests for guests or topics here on the program. But do continue to write to us. We want to hear from you on topics that you'd like to hear covered on this program or guests and subjects that you'd like to hear discussed on the show. And don't forget that it's really easy to communicate with us. You just go to financialsense.com. You click the button that says Contact Us. Also, on our recent survey, a whopping 97% of you said that you would refer Financial Sense to someone you know. And many of you are already doing that. So first of all, we do want to thank you. And second, a really easy way to let your friends and family know about us is to just simply link our programming through your favorite social media platform. And Jim, a little bit about sharing our guest for tomorrow. On tomorrow's edition of Lifetime Income, Jim interviews Ashley McHugh. She's a physical therapist. She'll be discussing how to remain healthy, exercise, and avoid debilitating injuries during retirement.
Yeah, this was in response to an email that we got, Chris, and said, hey, I'm healthy. I want to stay healthy. But what about us that exercise, rotator cuff problems, knees giving out? We're going to talk about things that you should be doing and some things you should not be doing, especially with rotator cuffs. I recently ran into that problem doing chin-ups. And basically, I use a weight-assisted chin-up machine because, you know, it was just putting too much pressure on the shoulders, and you can injure yourself. And the last thing you want to do is injure yourself and let it go. I have a client, female client, she's a doctor, 54 years old, was reaching over the overhead luggage rack on an airplane, threw her rotator cuff out. She's very athletic and she plays golf and was thinking, you know what, this will get better over time. Well, she's going to end up getting surgery and a couple pins put in your shoulder. So folks, listen to tomorrow's program because we want to keep you healthy and active throughout your retirement. That'll be coming up on tomorrow. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here. And remember, we want to hear from you. If it's a topic you want covered in depth, if it's a guest you would like to see covered or interviewed here on the program, we'd like to hear from you. In the meantime, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.